Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomini Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
The Long Knives Are Crying, a novel by Joseph M. Marshall III. Chapter 19, Men of Stature. No one knew exactly how many lodges were in the meadows near the White Buttes, but one old man took the trouble to climb up to one of the sandstone rims and look from there. He counted just over 400. As far the number of people, perhaps over 2,000, everyone agreed. Horses were another matter, however. Some of the horse guards thought there might be at least 4,000. A third of which were new colts. There were three distinct camps in the flat meadows, two in a north-south line, even with the buttes. The third, Sitting Bull's camp, sprawled to the east. Together the three formed roughly the shape of an arrowhead. The Crazy Horse people were in the camp at the south end. Each camp was arranged in a precise circle, with three to four rows of lodges set up in C-shaped patterns with the openings to the east. A festive air permeated the village. Drums pounded and the people danced for three nights in a row as each village hosted the doings that went far into the night. Relatives from the far-flung reaches of the nation were happy to see one another, some after a year or more. Many children and young people were introduced to relatives they had often heard about but never met. Friendships were renewed, especially among the elderly. As the people came together, at first it seemed the days were not long enough to see and visit everyone. But after several days, the initial busyness diminished somewhat, though the excitement remained. Many of the old men were anxious to get to the issues at hand. In the space between the three camps, several warrior society lodges had been erected. In the center of them was a new council lodge, the biggest and tallest anyone had ever seen. It was nearly 30 long paces across and as tall, and the story of how it came to be circulated quickly. Sitting Bull had asked the older women in his extended family to cut down and sew together three old lodge coverings. Although the 42 hides were pieced together from old lodges, the long spruce poles were new, and so was the purpose for the new old lodge. On the afternoon of the fourth day of the gathering, Sitting Bull invited the warrior leaders into the lodge. He had sensed something palpable in the air and wanted to take advantage of it. After all, if he was nothing else, he was shrewd. Two other shrewd, gray-haired old men had been keeping an eye on things and an ear to the ground. Sitting near the council lodge in the shade of a low frame covered with hides, Red Shirt and Ogallala and Eagle Man, a Hunkpapa, watched, and not without a certain sense of pride, the warrior leaders arriving one by one and two by two. How many people are with Spotted Tail and Red Cloud at the agency is hard to know, Eagle Man commented. But it seems to me that we have our share of warrior leaders. Having enough warrior leaders is a good thing, but we must have enough fighting men to follow them, Red Shirt pointed out. True, Eagle Man agreed. But it is good to see that we have such men with us here. And we have the greatest of them all, Red Shirt said resolutely as he pointed to Crazy Horse ducking into the council lodge. Yes, and we cannot forget the one man who brought us all here, Eagle Man was quick to reply. He is gathering the warrior leaders to him, and the people are watching as we are. Old people are the symbol of wisdom. Our warrior leaders are a symbol of our strength as a nation. When we see a man like Crazy Horse, anyone who knows him or has heard of him thinks of the victories he has won, and of the strength of his medicine. That is what Sitting Bull is doing. By bringing all these warrior leaders together, and by having all of us watch them walk through the camps, he is reminding us of our victories, our strengths. Red Shirt chuckled. Yes, and he is also showing his power and influence. Those warrior leaders are going to him to listen to what he has to say. As the two old men sat in the shade inside the lodge, Sitting Bull sat quietly, waiting patiently. The Hunkpapa leader was not a tall man, and he was still fit and trim for a man approaching his sixth decade. He did walk with a noticeable limp, however, testimony to his early years as a warrior when an enemy's bullet had smashed into his right hip. Flecks of gray were beginning to streak through his hair, which he wore in two long braids wrapped in otter skins. His eyes were large and dark and missed nothing, and in combination with the long, straight nose and the wide, slightly downturned mouth, he exuded an air of strength and no-nonsense. But he was quick to smile as well and poke fun of himself to put others at ease. All in all, no single Lakota commanded as much respect from young and old alike as he did. As Red Shirt and Eagle Man had pointed out, among the Lakota and their Cheyenne allies were many experienced military leaders tested mightily by the fire of battle. Sadly, however, some of the Lakota leaders were at the agencies near Camp Robinson, fighting boredom instead of long knives or Crow or Shoshone. Fortunately, several sat in the council lodge with the Hunkpapa leaders, such as He Dog, Black Moon, and Good Road. Two of the Cheyenne were the venerable Two Moons and the accomplished Bobtail Horse. Two of the best were sitting with the Hunkpapa leader, Gall, also a Hunkpapa, and Crazy Horse. Tall and broad shoulders with handsome features, Gall certainly looked the part of a decisive and successful battlefield leader. At times he was self-confident to a point of arrogance, though his confidence was well-founded, partly because he enjoyed a special status as a protege of Sitting Bull. But no one except Sitting Bull was as well-known as Crazy Horse. His battlefield exploits were legendary. Many still talked about how he and a small group of decoys baited a column of soldiers into a surround and eventual defeat at the Battle of the Hundred in the Hand. Warriors still described how he was always the first to charge the enemy and the last to leave the battlefield in raids against the Crow. Although he was famous throughout Lakota territory, many of the Sitting Bull people were seeing him for the very first time. They were surprised that he was so boyishly slender and quiet to the point of being almost painfully shy. That characteristic endeared him to the elderly. The presence of such renowned military leaders gave the people a feeling of strength and confidence. It was an unexpected gift, in a sense, and Sitting Bull wanted to make the most of it. After all, sitting next to him was Crazy Horse, a man whose warriors followed in a heartbeat, one respected by experienced warrior leaders older than he was. The challenge for Sitting Bull was to convince the old men that their warriors were the point of the lance that could drive away the whites, and the shaft of the lance would have to be the support of the people. But for the people to give and maintain their support, first the old leaders would have to give their unwavering support. Not until after the pipe circled the double row of men did Sitting Bull speak. "My relatives," he began, "it is good to see all of you. I am grateful that you honored my invitation. When I sent my messengers out last winter, I could only hope that someone would take me seriously. It does my heart good to see all the people here. We Hunkpapa were here for a day before anyone else came. Three young Ogallala men were already here, but when I saw my friends Worm and High Eagle come over the horizon with their people behind them, my heart danced." Hard-bitten warrior smiled as the Hunkpapa medicine man expressed his joy at something as simple as an arrival. Yet to him, it was not simple. "Those of us here today may be the only hope for our nation," he said, pointing out a possibility many in the lodge had considered. "It is hard to say how many more of our people will come. With us, the Hunkpapa, Armanikanju, Oohenupa, and Sihasapa families. There are Sichangu among the Ogallala, and of course, we are glad some of our Cheyenne friends are with us. And someone tells me that there are some Blue Clouds as well. The messengers I sent east returned with word that our Dakota and Nakota relatives would try to join us, if the Great Muddy River is not too high and if some of them were able to cross before the ice began to break up. If they cannot cross, and if no one comes from the agencies to the south, we are the only hope." He paused to gaze around a circle of strong faces. "But I refuse to think we are the last hope. I say that because there is another generation waiting. Although we may be few in numbers, our willingness to endure any hardship to stay free will make one man fight like he is three or four. That is what we must teach the next generation. For that, I look to all of you." "We will do what we must, Uncle," Goodroad said quietly. "I have two young sons. Their mother and I did not raise them up to be anything but Lakota. We have made our choices, my family and I." "You speak a truth that will help us persevere," replied Sitting Bull. "The more of us who share that truth, the harder it will be for anyone to defeat us. That truth is just as important as guns and bullets. So I must ask all of you, each of you, to help our fighting men to understand that truth." If we run out of bullets and arrows, then we fight with clubs and lances. If we have no clubs and lances, we fight with our hands. The power in the man who fights to the end is the willingness to endure whatever it takes. Many of us have been speaking and listening to the young men, Gall explained. I have not found any doubt among them as to what they want to do. So we must show them the way, as you say, and we will. Good, good, the Hunkpapa medicine man exclaimed. That will help me to convince the omen that we should stand together until we accomplish the difficult task ahead of us. Some of them do not understand the danger we face. Some of them are willing to wait and see what happens. I say we cannot wait. We should not wait any longer. Uncle, what do you think we should do first? Asked Higgy Dog. We have people and horses to feed, replied Sitting Bull. Water, food, and grass are what we need, and to sleep peacefully at night. It is not likely that anyone will think of attacking us, anyone but Long Knives, that is. We have scouts as far as half a day out all around us, Crazy Horse pointed out quietly, in pairs. If they see anything we need to know, one will come back and the other will stay behind to keep an eye out. They are watching for game as well as for enemies. We have sentinels on the high points around the camp, Gall added. Guards are in with the horses at night. Good, Sitting Bull said, absorbed in thought. While we stay safe, the people must not want for anything. And as far as grazing, how long do you think we can stay here near the buttes until we have to find new grass? 10 to 15 days, Goodroad estimated. We can take the brood mares and colts to graze during the daylight to a different area each day and bring them back to the camp at night, he suggested. And we can break them up into smaller herds. It will be a good task for the older boys. The horses we ride every day and the buffalo runners and war horses we can keep close. In the meantime, Gall said, we can look for the next campsite. There is a running creek southwest of here with good grass on either side of it. Good. If our horses are strong, then so are we, said Sitting Bull. The Hunkpapa medicine man paused for a moment, glancing quickly around with an inner sense of satisfaction. Every man waited with rapt attention. That leads me to my next concern, though I think I know the answer. How many fighting men do we have? Crazy Horse cleared his throat. Around 300. Most of us have a gun of some kind, a lot of muzzle loaders, some breech loaders, a few that can hold 7 bullets at a time. Just about everyone has a six-shooter. Like always, a steady supply of bullets and powder is a difficult thing. Ah, yes, Sitting Bull muttered. Bullets. I sent messengers to some of the sheep-eater people far to the western mountains. I heard they have good trade with the whites, so I thought we could do some trade with them for bullets. Very little came of it. I am afraid bullets will always be a problem. That is why we tell everyone to hunt with the bow, said Black Moon. We can recover an arrow that misses, but not a bullet, and a bow is quiet, and it does not scare the animals away. A wise approach, Sitting Bull agreed. And how about our younger men? I know they have the skills, but what about the will? Those who are 15, 16, and 17, Crazy Horse replied, are the most inexperienced. They do have the skills, so we will give them as much practice as we can. Older warriors will take 2 or 3 along every time they go on a patrol. I am glad to hear it. That is as it should be. Leaning back against his willow chair, Sitting Bull sighed. This is a good spring, the best I have seen in a few years. The summer grasses will be good for the elk and the deer, as well as for our horses. It is important to our future for wise men to talk. The more they talk, the more answers they will find. I must depend on you, the leaders that you are, to give us that chance. We will do that, Crazy Horse replied. Our eyes and ears, our scouts, are out there. Enemies may come, but we will keep them away. All the people will be safe. Sitting Bull nodded, his eyes bright. We are a free people. We eat, we sleep, we dance, and we laugh. We will face our problems and our enemies straight on. For every step we take backward, we will take 2 forward. That has been our way since the days of our grandfathers' grandfathers. It was our strength then, and it is our strength now. Eagle Man and Red Shirt watched the warrior leaders file out of the council lodge. A few of them paused to chat with the 2 old men before going on their way. Grandfather, they would say to each of them, it is good to see you. The old men smiled, pleased to be acknowledged. For a moment, each of them remembered their days as younger men, when their hair was still black and their joints not so stiff. Those were days when they were the first line of defense, as these men now were. "Good to see you as well, grandson," they would reply. Around the two old men throughout the three camps, young and old, were going about the day. Younger children played games. Older children helped with various tasks. Girls watched over babies bundled in cradle boards or hung out sleeping robes to freshen in the sun, or helped grandmothers keep an eye on meat drying on the racks. Boys took family horses to water or helped move small herds to a new grazing area. Occasional laughter and squeals of children and the muffled rumble of a horse herd being moved blended with the distant trills of meadowlarks floating across the prairie and the high, shrill cries of hawks and eagles soaring on cool breezes. It was all worth a good smoke, so Eagle Man reached for his pipe bag. Sitting Bull waited until the last man stepped out of the council lodge before he turned to Crazy Horse. Known to but a few, the two men had met during the winter when Crazy Horse had traveled northeast with his wife. They had talked for days. Crazy Horse realized that no one understood the full extent of the white problem the way Sitting Bull did. The Black Hills were now the stronghold of gold-hungry white men. According to Sitting Bull, it would not have mattered if the Lakota had killed all those who came to dig for gold. Others would have come in their place. In one generation, the numbers of buffalo had diminished astonishingly. No one, not even the wisest man, had foreseen that tragedy. But a tragedy just as great was the loss of sustenance for the body and the spirit for the people of the buffalo. First came the hunger of the body, to be followed by the hunger of the spirit. They had both wept when they had talked of this reality. Thankfully, the wagons along the Holy Road, called the Oregon Trail by the whites, had stopped coming. They had been a pestilence summer after summer, and the ruts they had cut into the earth were deep scars. On either side were graves of white travelers and the bones of their horses, cattle, and mules, but the wagon people had cast covetous eyes on the lands as they passed. So the peace talkers had called the Lakota to Fort Laramie and showed them pictures of the land and told them where they could live and where they could hunt so that they would be out of the way of the white people coming. That was not the worst of it. The worst was when several Lakota headmen allowed their names to be marked on the paper, giving their consent to whatever the words on the paper said. And who among the Lakota really knew what those words said? Then those headmen had pitched their lodges on the agencies near the mouth of the Smoking Earth River at the Longknife outpost known as Camp Robinson. That was yet another bitter reality. Most of the Lakota people had followed those headmen to those agencies, but it also raised a question. Did those people follow blindly, or did they surrender of their own accord? Over those wintry days, that was a question that gnawed at both of them. The answer to it would come, or not, in the days ahead. "Nephew," said the older man, breaking into Crazy Horse's reverie, "I wanted to talk to you about the attack on Two Moons and He-Dog a few months ago." "They can tell you they were there." "No, I want to hear what you think about where the Long Knives came from." Crazy Horse nodded thoughtfully. "From the south. Two of our scouts followed their trail toward the Shell River for several days. There are three Long Knife outposts, Laramie, the one upriver from there, and the one north of Elk Mountain." "I see. Any closer than those?" "No. I know they could not have come from the outposts where the Heart River flows into the Great Muddy. That is a long way for Long Knives to travel in the winter, and we would have known. I hear there is a large outpost in the west beyond the Beartooth Mountain." "Yes, I think that is true," Crazy Horse asserted. "The same day we got word that Two Moons and He-Dog were attacked, Cloud and several other men found two Long Knives north of one of our camps. They took their horses and weapons away. They came from the east or the west. They could not have come from the southern outposts." Sitting Bull shook his head slowly, his brow furrowed in thought. "We may not know where the Long Knives are, but we do not know how many." Sitting Bull shook his head slowly, his brow furrowed in thought. "We may know where the Long Knives are, but we do not know how many." "True, but we do know they do not do well in our country. Their big horses are not suited to the land. The Long Knives themselves are not true horse warriors. They seem to prefer fighting on foot and in large groups. They ride to the battle and then get off to fight. We fight from the backs of our horses, and our horses are trained for that. They do not know our lands. These things are in our favor, and I plan to take advantage of their weaknesses and our strengths. The medicine man nodded slowly. You are right. The fighting skills of our men are much better than theirs. If every one of our warriors had a good rifle and plenty of bullets, we would outfight them every time. That brings me to something else I want to talk about. Crazy Horse nodded and waited. It is hard to know if more of our people will join us, Sitting Bull declared cautiously. My biggest concern is the number of fighting men. We have 300 now, and I think many of the single men will break away from the agency, so we may have 400. That is still a small number, and there are still battles to be fought, if our leaders agree with me. So if we have no more than 300 or 400, how do we make the best use of them without putting our women and children and the old ones in danger? Yes, I have been thinking about that, Crazy Horse replied. Perhaps we should not wait for the Long Knives to come looking for us. Small groups of warriors can move fast, say 20 or so. We can attack their outposts or near them and fade into the hills before they can counterattack. We can make them chase us around. It will not be necessary to always defeat them in one battle. We can wear them down, pick them off a little at a time. That means enough men could stay home to protect everyone else. Yes, small groups could stay in the field for half a month, then others could take their place. Men and horses could come home to rest. Leaning back against his chair, the medicine man looked out the door. After a moment, he sighed and spoke again. It is time to adapt. We cannot change the difficult things that have happened. Who knows if the buffalo will be plentiful again? We can hope, but in the meantime, we have to live with the realities that face us, like it or not. If we dwell on the losses, we will waste our energy weeping. Instead of crying, we need to change how we survive. Crazy Horse could not have agreed more. For our warriors, it means we do not fight for honors or for the simple satisfaction of knowing we are better than an enemy we face on a given day. He paused to stare at the empty fire pit and then spoke again. The hollow tone in his voice matched the cold intensity in his dark eyes. We have to fight to kill the Long Knives and their kind. When enough of them have died, they will not want to set foot on our lands anymore. Eagle Man and Red Shirt finished their smoke as the two men stepped out of the council lodge. The younger one was dressed very plainly with only a single tail feather of a red-tailed hawk hanging down the back of his head. The older one walked with a limp and used a short lance as a cane. Neither was as tall as some Lakota men were, but other men did not have the kind of stature that stood higher than size or strength as these two did. The two old men struggled to their feet as Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull approached and stopped. Crazy Horse saw the pipe leaning against the altar stone beneath the shade. "Pray for us, grandfathers," he said. "We have much to do." "We will, grandson," Eagle Man assured him. "We will." "Uncle," Sitting Bull said to each of the old men in turn, "it is good to see you." "And you as well," Red Shirt replied, his old eyes shining. And that concludes chapter 19.
This program is made possible by funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.